Welcome to Pemba On Demand. I'm Norm Chapin, your host. I am very excited to welcome you to our podcast. Pemba On Demand is produced for physicians interested in professional development. We will be discussing a wide range of topics on the podcast. I will be interviewing physician leaders from the U.S. and from other countries who have graduated from the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. These physicians will be sharing stories of professional and personal growth, overcoming challenges in their organizations, and discussing key leadership skills they have learned from the MBA program and ongoing professional development. Welcome to episode 20 of Pemba On Demand. In this episode of Pemba On Demand, Revolutionizing Healthcare, AI's Role in Modern Medicine, we are releasing the live stream with Dr. Benson Babu from our July 16th, 2024 live stream. Dr. Babu is a practicing internist and associate professor of hospital medicine in New York City. Ben has many other accomplishments, as you will hear from the live stream introduction. Ben and I attended Pemba at the Haslam College of Business, University of Tennessee in 2008. I've enjoyed following Ben's career and his passion for process improvement and artificial intelligence. I'm very pleased to provide this podcast of our live stream. Good afternoon, everybody. I am happy to welcome you to our live stream, our on-demand live stream for today. I'm Norm Chapin, your host for the live stream. And today we're trying something a little bit new. We've added the ability to bring you in via Zoom and to see how that works. So we're recording the Zoom meeting. We're also live streaming directly out to YouTube. We do have several guests on the show today or participants. We are going to ask that you remain muted during the live stream. But if you'd like to ask a question, you can use the comments to put in a question. Please type in a capital Q colon before your question. It will be easier for me to see which questions we want to address. But if you have any questions, please put them in the comment section and Dr. Babu will be addressing those. So today our live stream, the title of our live stream is Revolutionizing Healthcare, AI's Role in Modern Medicine. And Dr. Benson Babu, who is an esteemed professor of hospital medicine at Wyckoff Medical Center, has devoted his career to enhancing healthcare organizations and healthcare operations through a variety of innovative approaches. And he first began his process of utilizing innovation by getting his MBA at the University of Tennessee. We were in the same class back in 2008, and he learned a lot about Lean Six Sigma and process improvement at that time. And then his journey into AI was further strengthened by obtaining a certificate in artificial intelligence from Harvard University and also completing his boards in the American Board of Artificial Intelligence in Medicine. He attended Harvard University, and there he specialized in designing and implementing AI solutions for healthcare, and then did several programs at MIT focusing on designing and building AI projects also. He also holds an ISO 42001 internal auditor certification for AI systems, ensuring rigorous standards of safety and efficacy in AI applications, and is currently completing a data science master's degree at Harvard. As both an advisor to multiple AI healthcare tech companies and the former chief medical officer of LabelMD, Dr. Babu plays a pivotal role in ensuring that AI innovations meet the highest standards of both quality and effectiveness. Leading an AI research lab, he collaborates closely with grad students, medical students, and residents on cutting-edge AI projects. Notably, Dr. Babu spearheads an AI healthcare digital health entrepreneurship elective for medical students, cultivating our next generation of healthcare innovators. Currently, he's actively involved in a QI improvement, quality improvement length of stay initiative using AI applications, and is promoting or pioneering rather the use of state-of-the-art generative AI technologies in healthcare. Dr. Babu is also an accomplished author. He's authored several influential books on AI in healthcare. His latest publication, Advanced Provider Assistance Systems, Autonomous AI, The Age of Intelligence, and Zero-Click Healthcare AI, explore the implications of AI-driven advancements in healthcare. So I'm excited that you can join us today as we explore the latest advancements in AI and envision a future where artificial intelligence revolutionizes medicine. So welcome to our podcast, Ben. It's great to have you on the show with us today.
Hi, Norm. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you. I've been looking forward to this particular live stream for many months now. You and I have kind of reconnected a little bit over the past few months as we started looking about ways that we could share some of your expertise with our audience. So thank you for taking the time to share that on our show today.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you very much.
So I thought maybe we'd start a little bit by talking about some AI advances and how it's impacting other industries outside of healthcare. I wonder if you could provide us with a brief overview of some of the ways that AI is transforming non-healthcare industries today.
Yeah, Norm, it's an excellent question that you have. The technology industry is now growing at an exponential rate. Give you an example, like Microsoft technology company is now worth over $3 trillion in market cap. And just recently, NVIDIA has now become a $3 trillion company as market cap. And to give you a sense from a market value side of things in terms of AI and its growth potential, as well as its future growth over the next few years, AI is currently valued at $150 billion and is currently projected to grow to about $1.4 trillion over the next 6 years. And that is huge. Most of these AI technologies that are being designed and implemented from the big tech companies are, as everyone can see here, is the use of the popular use of ChatGPT. And that's one of the applications that are now gaining a lot of work and traction towards developing what's called generative artificial intelligence. And now there's a roadmap for companies such as Microsoft, OpenAI, and all the competitors to develop a stepwise approach towards artificial general intelligence. And there's actually 5 steps to that. There's step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5. Step 1, we're at the chatbot development stage, and it works its way up towards developing an agentic workflow. What that means is a lot of these agents are going to be deployed out into organizations, and eventually, as the technology matures, we'll be able to run specific narrow processes in autonomous way, in an autonomous capability, and be able to reason and make decisions autonomously at level 5 without the need for a human in the loop. So that's where the tech is heading over the next few years. Some people say over 10 years, some people say it may happen over the next 20 years. We don't know exactly what's going to happen at level 5, but that's where the tech industry is moving towards.
So do you think that level 5, and we can talk more about that, are there any industries right now that are at level 5, or what is the highest level that we're seeing in most industries outside of healthcare?
Right now, the industries, the state of the art, which I would say Microsoft, OpenAI, Google, are now operating anywhere between level 1 and level 2.
Okay.
And level 1 is the chatbots that you're seeing that's able to generate the next word prediction. And then level 2 is where the chatbot is able to operate at a level of a PhD.
Okay.
Where Microsoft and Google and other tech companies are in that space in the same market cap are operating between level 1 and level 2. And okay. Level 5 is when you have autonomous decision making by these agents, what they call agents, but they're developed and distributed across the organization, and they work together to orchestrate jobs together in unison. Agentic workflows that work autonomously and make decisions without the human in the loop. That's level 5. That's the highest level
okay.
that they're shooting for.
And that's 20 or 10 or 20 years down the line for us right now.
If some people say if you ask OpenAI, Sam Altman, he'll say 5 years, but some experts will say 50 years. We don't know when the next, how that's going to change. But we all know that for now, AI technology, it grows at a rapid pace.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been amazed at some of the predictions in terms of how quickly our use of AI and the skills of AI are going to change. Some people I've read talk about a doubling of knowledge or skill with these bots every 3 months, every 6 months. What are you hearing from being much closer to the industry than I am?
Healthcare industry is further behind technology, as we all know. And they can be many years behind, for example, 10, 20 years behind. And for the most part, it's designed that way to protect patients. To give you an understanding, the market for AI in healthcare is around $10 billion right now, $10 or $15 billion, let's say, based on the current estimates. And they expect it to grow to about $103 billion over the next 6 years, to about on the year of 2030. We are behind by a few years because of, number one, we don't really know exactly what these, we don't have safety parameters on how this will work out in the inpatient setting or in the hospital setting in a full clinical utility, but it is, every segment is growing over time. And we are adopting it relatively quickly than we would think in medicine over the past 2 years since the advent of ChatGPT came out in 2022. So we're seeing a lot more adoption in certain aspects of medicine faster than usual.
Okay. And are all of the uses of AI that we have now, are they treated like medical devices? Do they all require FDA approval before they can be rolled out within healthcare settings?
Not always. If the FDA classifies AI based on risk to the patients, and if you have a certain level of risk, it needs to go through a regulatory environment if it's going to be commercialized outside of your hospital system. That's in general. And the risk is categorized as a level 1 through 3, being 1 is the lower risk, and then 3 being the highest risk.
Okay.
If you're building certain solutions out within your hospital systems, for example, ChatGPT, and you want to implement that into a low risk environment, meaning, let's say, a QI project for length of stay, there are current oversight guidelines that FDA has mentioned that it doesn't need to go through the regulatory process because you're not commercializing it.
Okay.
So therefore, that's why you see many of these organizations now have built out some of their chatbots and internally and are using it internally for low risk environments and moving towards clinical domains once they have a good sense and further refine the maturity of the model, making sure that they're more able to adapt to medical domain without the errors and with a good safety strategy in place.
It's interesting as you talk about non-healthcare industries, it's a reminder that AI is going to become a huge part of the tech industry, right? I mean, from a financial standpoint, it's going to become an economic engine all on its own as it provides services out to other sectors of our industry.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, for example, the stock market, most of the trading platforms are now AI autonomous, algorithmic trading. Hedge funds like Renaissance AI is all using autonomous systems to execute trades out. And then you see food delivery services, Seamless Web, they're all optimized by AI platforms. You know, Uber, Lyft are all being optimized by AI platforms, as well as many of the financial industries, credit fraud detection, mortgage applications. These are all being governed on the back end by AI systems, and we really don't see them. So, yeah.
One of the questions that just popped into my head as you were talking, done some recent courses on cybersecurity. Do you think that AI is going to be a net positive to protect healthcare organizations from cyber crimes, or do you think it's going to improve the ability of the cyber criminals to attack us more effectively?
This is an excellent question, and I think it's a complex because as the AI space grows, the cyber tech space grows. And you see that in parallel when you look at the market. When you look at what the market's doing from a stock market perspective, the value of the cybersecurity space from a tech side of things has grown in parallel to the AI aspect too. There are always adversarial and malicious players that want to attack systems. And right now, it's at a pace where whichever technology grows the fastest. And there's always going to be malicious actors, but healthcare systems will have to develop robust AI applications to figure out, you know, vectors for attack within their hospital systems using advanced AI tools too. So it works both. If the malicious actors are developing systems to breach hospital systems, in the same token, the good guys and girls will develop technology solutions to combat that. It's just going to be one of those competitive platforms, like a competing, you know, antagonist, protagonist kind of scenario.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch who gets the upper hand using AI, whether it's a better defensive tool or a better offensive tool for the cyber criminals.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. But it is scary though, from a healthcare perspective side of things. So we have to understand the gravity of it.
Yes.
Of an attack on a hospital healthcare system.
So let's pivot and talk a little bit more in detail about some of the trends you see in healthcare and AI. Where do you see the AI having the biggest impact in the next several years?
Well, right now, FDA has currently approved about 880 new medical devices, and it's poised to grow within the radiology domain, the medical imaging that's maturing. Mm-hmm. As well as cardiovascular areas. For example, the CTFFR is now being used using AI to figure out chest pain pathways, cardiology, ACC, and those areas will be growing. Over the next few years, you'll see a lot of the low-code environments where you're going to see these AI models being deployed out as platforms. And these platforms, you'll have multiple AI algorithms that are being approved for use in the healthcare domain, the medical domain, but then they'll be made very easy for non-tech users, like a more plug-and-play kind of scenario. And then we're able to be utilizing a lot of these AI models, but on one platform, so it's easier for integration for hospitals and for easier for the end user to use it, like physicians, without the need for the compute resources and staffing, the expertise with the AI. And we're moving towards that trend. And we'll have a trend where you'll see eventually hospitals, that the smaller hospitals were able to use those resources on the front line by non-tech people, but have the cloud service providers providing, the major cloud service providers providing the support for these workflows. And a lot of the industry is partnering with the cloud service providers, for example, like Microsoft. They have a tool for length of stay and all these things that you can work, you know, in a secure environment. And you can also create length of stay assessments. And I'm just giving a simple example. And then, because most of the times these AI, your organization needs to be a state to run these workloads in terms of compute resources. And they have a grading scale on how mature your hospital system is for AI. If it is at level zero in terms of AI maturity, or if it's like a level five with full underlying compute resources with hardware infrastructure and advanced IT infrastructure to run these workloads the way that you would want it uniformly without integration issues.
So when you're talking about platforms, it sounds like a lot of work is going on in terms of having these available to us from cloud-based resources, obviously, so that organizations, and we've already moved heavily into cloud-based resources for many of our other applications. But one of the questions I guess I have, there's a whole array of tools that I'm seeing be developed to assist physicians with some of the more time-intense activities, such as documentation, providing patient education for patients, those types of things. There's also tools that I've learned from talking with you that are more on the side where they're assisting us to make a better diagnosis or to help us with heuristics and those types of things. Do you see one of those areas as being the stronger focus for the next several years before it shifts? Or do you see both of those becoming much, much more advanced over the next 24 months?
The way I see things moving right now, every organization is going through different stages of the level of AI maturity. That means the full stack, having the full technology capabilities, hardware, the resources, meaning staff resources, and the cloud capabilities. And then there's all different levels of maturity. And then the other way I look at it is when you look at AI, you're looking at the patient risk, the risk to patients. Now, we see that a lot of the tools that we're implementing are lower to medium risk, and low risk by meaning you see a lot of the prior authorizations, the billing, that technology is being, have been around for a while and are now more mature. They'll start off with the low-risk environments and then move towards a more higher risk, clinical risk, that is, clinical applications. And it's like a, think of it as like a tsunami coming in, starting from outside, outside being like low-risk environments, like narrow, and they call it narrow procedures, like you want to order a CBC, it'll order that, but it has low risk to the patient. Or for example, if you want to look at length of stay or financial pieces, that's low risk. But then as we move towards applying discharge summary and generative AI, that's a little bit more advanced risk, but we have to refine the technology so there's more accuracy without the errors and then with the safety protocols in place for malicious actors. And that's what we're doing right now. And then you'll see that moving towards the more higher risk scenarios in conjunction with the regulatory environments and approvals by FDA. Okay. The more higher risk then has to go through making sure that patients are safe. So you'll see that wave going in like this, giving you a conceptual overview for, you know, moving towards discharge summaries, refining it. For example, Epic is, everybody is probably an administrator of some sort. Epic and other EMR systems are now implementing ChatGPT and other open source models within the message systems, you know, mm-hmm. inboxes. And that's a low risk kind of feature. And then once they perfect that model, and then they'll kind of move towards more advanced inpatient systems.
Do you think that any physicians will be able to practice medicine without utilizing some type of AI?
I think, Devrin, generally now, looking at the trends that we're seeing, whether from the technology industry and looking at healthcare industry, it is really has significant impact on efficiency, operational efficiency. And anything that would help the physicians spend more time with patients, that's valuable.
This podcast is sponsored by the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Haslam College of Business. In less than one calendar year, this program will equip you with valuable business acumen and leadership development not found in traditional medical school curriculum. Are you ready to join the longest-running physician-only MBA program in the country and a network of nearly 1,000 PEMBA graduates? Visit tiny.utk.edu/podcast for information about this exciting opportunity. And now we'll return to the episode. We got a couple of questions. Do you mind if I switch to the chat for a second and have you handle a couple of these?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So the first question was from Dr. Leiter and asking, how does the level certification occur and where can providers find the results of those certifications?
The certification is a general framework that was developed by Microsoft. And in the tech industry, they look at businesses. These are the first initially, it was developed in the tech industries and other business outside of medicine. So it was, they wanted to see what the maturity level for these businesses are for AI workloads. And they have a graded system. They, meaning Microsoft, has developed a graded system to assess the organizational maturity level, whether it's there's nothing going on in your organization in terms of deploying out AI to all the way through that you have a full integrated AI workflows that doesn't have any problems with EMR integration. You have the optimized data workflows and the whole support teams are intact. That's continuously in real time. This is the level 5. This is where a full mature system is in place. And that gives you a good sense. Certification now, ISO, International, the bodies of standard organization, developed a 42,001 certification for AI management systems this December 2023. And they've released it, and your businesses are able to get certified and accredited, similar to JCO and other regulatory bodies, to see if you're implementing AI solutions, if it follows transparency, if it follows the ethical aspects of it, there's no bias, there's safety protocols that are in place. And then they provide an audit trail and gets verified by a governing body, for example, DNV, and other governing bodies that oversee the ISO. So now this environment is now more mature for and is a pathway for businesses to achieve that standardization in terms of maturity towards a mature AI environment. And now we have several tech companies, such as the big tech companies, Microsoft, Google, they're all applying for this 42001 certification to show them that they're, you know, doing everything that they can, making sure that there's transparency with these AI applications, making sure that there's no issues with safety, and they're following rigorous standards in the tech industry.
And are those standards, those same standards, going to be applied once healthcare organizations start deploying the higher level AI platforms?
Yes, that's correct. For example, ISO has specific standards on how to oversee the chatbots, ChatGPT in the clinical environment, their stepwise way of how to audit these systems.
And I know you're an auditor for ISO 42001. Have you been auditing in any healthcare systems? Are there any healthcare systems that are moving along like Google and Microsoft?
That's an excellent question. I personally have been auditing startup companies that are developing technologies for healthcare. I have not started internally auditing hospital systems. There's two levels of audits. There's internal level of audit, and then there's external auditors. And then that has to be overseen by a governing body. So you have to have all of these things to make sure that you follow the audit trail appropriately.
And what was the process that you had to go through to become an auditor? Was that part of your training and getting board certification in AI, or was that a different pathway?
No, that was there are courses that are and educational training that is given by certain governing bodies for ISO, and DNV is one of them. It's involves going through the regulatory framework for the 42001. And then making sure that you have the audit system in place and how systems can conform to that and develop systems to conform to ISO regulations. And there's a stepwise approach on how to do that on a regular basis, how to assess, and then how to make sure you're compliant with it. And that is followed over time.
Thank you. Let's take Don's second question. And I was reading about this the other day in preparation for this. I actually listened to an interview, and they were talking about the amount of energy that's required to manage AI within the tech industry. And that's kind of what Don's next question is how is that additional energy expense going to be passed on to consumers, and how much of an increased cost will that become for healthcare organizations or other industries? If you have any sense of that, I'd appreciate your perspective on that as well.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question too, Don. And a lot of the tech industries are focusing towards having a carbon footprint. And there are tools and techniques on how to improve that and reduce the energy costs. And they're working on that currently. Now, it gives you a sense of infrastructure needed. To give you a sense of what the infrastructure is needed and what kind of energy consumption is, there is a few articles that people release on how to best improve the carbon footprint. And there are different ways on how to do it. Microsoft, OpenAI, and the big tech companies such as Google are applying those carbon footprint reducing energy requirements. And I predict you'll see that being applied to healthcare when the time comes. Once you have a mature system using AI at full capacity, that's when you'll have to start worrying about energy usage.
Okay.
At that scale.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I'd never thought about it, and I just happened to run across this article. It's interesting, Don. That was a great question. So thanks for asking that.
Yeah. And one of my colleagues actually, they had developed a PhD just to focus on how to develop efficient solutions. Yeah, on how to reduce that footprint, how to reduce the energy consumption in a more efficient way from a technical side of things. They're actively working on it, and they're supported by the government to reduce the carbon footprint.
Interesting. Well, let's come back a little bit. And you talked about generative AI. We've talked about kind of obliquely some large language model development like ChatGPT and those types of things. And there's been a lot of talk about having a human in the loop so that we can try to identify some of the pitfalls that currently exist with those models in terms of, I heard the term AI hallucinations the other day, where you kind of just have to be careful that the information is accurate and is reliable, is evidence-based. I mean, obviously, that's a large concern in our industry. Do you have any thoughts about how providers who are actively using large language models might be even using ambient listening to help them create documentation? What are some special steps that we should all be taking or utilizing to try to make sure that we're using it appropriately?
Knowing the fact that hallucinations cannot be fully taken away, there's always going to be some level of hallucination when you use ChatGPT or open source models. There's always going to be some level of error. You have to have a human in the loop, providers in the loop, to oversee these errors and to be hypervigilant, not to just click and sign off on whatever discharge summary you see that's been generated by AI. You have to actually review through everything with a critical eye. And there's a thing where you have algorithmic bias. You just take for granted what the chatbot's saying, but you have to have that mindset where I want to make sure that everything that's coming out of ChatGPT or other large language models are accurate because of the fact that there's still going to be a small percent of hallucination, no matter what technique you optimize it, fine tune it, and adapt it towards medicine. There's always going to be that risk.
Great. So we have another question in the chat from Nicely Guzman. Where do non-tech savvy healthcare professionals start learning about AI in healthcare? What recommendations would you have for those of us who are just starting down the same journey that you started down 10 or 15 years ago?
Yeah, right now it's an amazing time because they've democratized a lot of the resources that used to be you had to pay for it. And there are a lot of free resources that are available throughout all of the major academic hospitals or academic systems, meaning like Harvard, MIT. They give free courses now as introductory course to give you an idea of what the language is at a very high level. Then the next step, and for example, Northwestern, I'll give you Boston, MIT, they all open sourced it for free. There's other big tech companies that provide resources at specific scenarios, specific AI-specific use cases, such as large language models, generative AI, radiology workflows. For example, NVIDIA has a lot of free resources. The big tech companies, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, all of them have free resources. If you want to get certified in certain aspects that applies to your field, you can apply for the training course and pay for the certificate and get certified in it. Google does that very well. Amazon has that too. Then if you want to explore in more detail and more technical involvement, there's a lot of master's and PhD level programs that the industry itself provide, and then as well as other academic hospital systems support and provide, and within the United States and internationally together. And it's a journey because this is something that if you're not from a technical background and has not coded, I would suggest get a overview of all of the language and then become a champion in working with industry and how to implement it in probably a low-risk environment first, or just getting an understanding of how it works, and then move towards if you want to get to a technical level, then you move towards advanced level, master's, PhD, or coding. First, you have to start with coding and then you work your way up. But from a non-technical side of things, most of the technology is moving towards a non-code environment. It's going to be plug and play. You don't really have to learn that much technical aspects. And the going trend is a lot of the individuals, the physicians, the providers are now learning how to use these low-code platforms that you can analyze your length of stay. You can analyze a lot of quantitative data for financial improvement of your hospital without the need for all the technical Python and C++. And then that's the best value of your time. in terms of impact on your system.
So we'll make those, some of those links that Ben just mentioned, we will make available in the on the YouTube channel as well. He and I talked about that as we were preparing for this course. So I will include some of those links on the YouTube channel for you. And then when this episode is released as a podcast, they'll also be available in the show notes. But Ben, you've written a couple of books. Are either of those books appropriate for people who are not tech savvy, or are those books more oriented for people who are familiar with different coding languages and that and are more into the technical side of creating AI?
Two books that I've wrote were actually geared towards healthcare providers with a non-technical background. And the first book, which is the Advanced Provider Assistance Systems, this gives you, it's adapted from autonomous vehicles, and they have advanced driver assistance systems. This is provider assistance systems, same technologies, but being applied to healthcare. It gives you a high level overview of what the use cases are in healthcare applications to give you an idea. Then the second book looks out into the future and gives providers an idea of what an ideal scenario of a level 5 mature AI system is. And it takes place in 2050. And a fully autonomous hospital with full bells and whistles, state-of-the-art, full-stack infrastructure. Doctor walks in, ambient systems, everything gets put into the EMR system. Robotics, surgery does by autonomous systems. Patients get in and out of the hospital in ideally 1 or 2 days length of stay. And then, you know, it works through that kind of scenario. So it gives you the whole spectrum. Initially, it gives you the idea of framework of what AI is in the first book. And then Zero Click is the one that takes place in a more advanced, in the futuristic perspective, where you have fully mature AI systems in play in autonomous hospitals.
So that's really where you took a deep look into a crystal ball to try to think about what it would be like when we get to level 5 certified systems.
Yeah.
With no, that's humans correct. In the loop. Okay. Well, and where can people purchase those? Are they available on Amazon or?
Yeah, they're available on Amazon. You can just look up my name and then they're available at a low cost.
You didn't use the pen name Jules Verne for the second book, did you? Like really futuristic?
No.
Great. Well, thank you for answering that question. And thanks nicely for the question. So one of the things that I wanted to cover today as well is, and we've talked a little bit about this in with your level of certifications, but where you're involved in medical education, postgraduate and graduate medical education, what are the biggest opportunities you see in that environment for improving the workforce training and development of physicians and advanced practice professionals as they go through the training? We saw during COVID, frankly, a tremendous impact based on shutting down surgery and quarantines in terms of medical education. Where do you see AI having the biggest impact as we're training the new providers and new physicians, new nurses, really everyone across the whole spectrum of our organizations and industry?
You know, AI is a very broad category and it has impact across all aspects. For example, we have fall detection risks technology that are implemented now all the way up to medical education and virtual augmented reality applications. But when I discuss these, the elective that the medical students have the capability of developing is an entrepreneurial aspect of medicine, which it discusses digital health and AI applications and how to use the language, what it is, how to implement that into medicine, how to integrate it to improve operational efficiency, how to create a business use case that will make impact and not just sit on a laboratory shelf. You want to make real-world impact on a very low-risk environment and come up with how to improve costs and quality and improve operational efficiency. And we walk through that pathway with medical students, and then we give them a Shark Tank pitch deck towards pitching their capstone project and seeing how they would perform giving a pitch with their concept.
Great. So that's more of helping them create future business models for themselves or within their group, potentially.
Potentially, yes. That's okay. One aspect of the elective, yes.
Okay. And how much interest do you see in that elective right now? Is this something that is a strong interest for many medical students or residents?
I'm working with several medical students and they're all engaged and They're trying to figure out how to use what the language is. AI is not easy. It's very difficult to actually get a concept, getting a high level overview of what that is. But they're all very actively engaged in how it can impact that generation in terms of improving the operations. They're very involved, actually. I have many different projects that are underway right now. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the younger generation comes up with. It's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety about workforce replacement. You know, will AI replace physicians, nurses? And you wrote a book, it sounds like, about kind of a future state that where AI was kind of functioning autonomously. But at the very beginning of this, you were pretty clear that you, number one, didn't know whether that would ever fully happen in healthcare, or two, how long it would take to get there. How do you answer the questions from physicians and healthcare providers about this anxiety about the impact that it's going to have on our workforce?
In my opinion now, when you ask me this today, as opposed to 2 or 3 years ago, I can tell you that I think these low manual, low value-added processes that take away time, that will be replaced. We won't do those tasks. And they will displace physicians to doing more cognitive, what we're literally paid to do. Think, make medical complex medical decisions, and focus time on patients. That's how it's going to be over the next few years. You'll see, you know, healthcare, like as we all know, healthcare systems adopt things and, you know, a little bit, there's a differential, you know, between the tech company, but in a good way. But that's where I see it's going. You know, we're not going to lose our jobs. We're just going to get displaced a little bit and have a value add.
Okay. Do you see a difference between the technical specialties, like you mentioned in your description of the book? You talked about autonomous surgical procedures and those things versus the cognitive specialties. Or do you think that the impact will be relatively similar, whether you're a surgeon, neurosurgeon, interventional cardiologist, or whether you're a neurologist or a rheumatologist or something like that?
Yeah. I mean, a few years ago, if you would take a look at medical imaging and ask me this, I thought maybe at that point where technology was, I thought maybe it would just be related to medical imaging because of the maturity at that specialty. However, mm-hmm. Now, when you look at ChatGPT and other language models being applied to social environments, people like actually talking to GPT. People from a psych's perspective, people like engaging with these chatbots, mainly because they have a lot of time in discussing and having more in-depth conversations and provide the perception of empathy than compared to the physicians or providers. And that's an area of cognitive applications we can see growing.
Okay. Thank you. Got another question in the chat from David Ball. Thank you, David. Are you utilizing any AI companies at your facilities? Any that you are interested in or excited about?
Yes, we are using several AI companies, and they're most along the lines of stroke protocols and ischemic stroke management pathways, as well as radiology workflows in terms of fracture recognition and certain lesion for lung cancer detection lesions.
So you're using them mainly, and I know you're working in the hospital medicine. Working in hospitalist medicine. So this is a project that you've been working with the Department of Radiology on, or that they started working on independently of your interest in AI?
No, this is a external third party that they've hired as a radiology within the radiology department is working on AI solutions. And as far as the stroke pathways are concerned, they're using a standard industry vendor.
Okay. And then Don asked another question. Do you think AI models may run in the background on EMRs or EHRs to learn from the patterns and results of care, and two, to improve clinician practice and practice activity to follow best practices? And he had another question about who would implement those kinds of systems within our organizations.
I'm hearing that some of my informatics colleagues will be able to better hone in on that, but I'm hearing through them that a lot of the EMR systems are setting up and poising a position for that. And the big vendors, they're moving in that direction. They're putting a lot of resources in developing the clinical decision support. And you'll see that over the next few years. HIMSS is a great resource for that in terms of clinical decision support and industry, as everyone probably knows here.
Yeah. And great. And we'll include the HIMSS website too as a link in the show for you all. I want to talk a little bit more with you. We've got about 10 minutes left. And you and I, as I mentioned earlier in the live stream, we both attended Pemba back in 2008. And it really seems like that kind of catapulted you into this world of continuous improvement. And it kind of led you down this AI path. When you decided to get your MBA, what did you think it would accomplish for your career, and how different is what it actually did for you compared to what you thought when you started?
Oh, okay. You know, when I first started hospital medicine, I realized it's painful practicing. And then I decided to do Pemba. And at that time, we were talking about lean. And I was really gung-ho about doing these lean projects. And I really love it. And that's pretty much, I didn't realize exactly how painful it is actually to do these projects on the front line. And, you know, after Pemba, obviously, it makes it easier to have that working knowledge and being able to apply those skills. And that was very rewarding, actually. It has been over the past 20-something years, 17, 18 years. Yeah.
What was your favorite memory of Pemba as you look back on it? What did you enjoy the most?
I love the granola bars and the time that I spent with everyone in the, you know, all my alumni. It was so cool actually going, hanging out, getting hands-on with the RP projects and then developing a capstone, all going through the same stress of being in Pemba, thinking and talking about how to get through finance, and then hanging out, just relaxing and networking in like these cool places. I really miss that actually. And it's really a long longitudinal awesomeness of an alumni network that we all can kind of lean back on and discuss stuff if we need to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think just getting to know people and collaborating in a way that was different from my normal day-to-day job was one of my fondest memories of working with people. In the Saturdays when we were on our virtual classes and reconnecting with people every week was enjoyable. So,
and the side chats on the Saturday evening side chat.
That's
used to
right.
have a lot of side chats.
Yeah. What do you think the opportunities are in AI for physicians right now? You've obviously gotten very involved in many different areas. Do you see that this is an area that we are going to need more physician leadership in the way that we did years ago in terms of healthcare organization leadership and medical group leadership?
Maybe. It's very hard to say now. I believe as this tech matures over time, you may see chief AI officers that are now being called to action. There's a few of them now that are now running hospital systems from an AI perspective in an academic environment. So you'll start seeing chief AI officer positions, and then you'll see a lot of champions. But we don't know. It's very hard to have a crystal ball to see how healthcare is going to move and how fast. We were talking about value-based care, you know, when we were in Pemba, and then look where we are now. So
yeah, great. Well, Ben, thank you very much for taking the time with us today. And I appreciate everybody who came on the show and watched with us as well. We're going to be having another live stream in 4 weeks. We have these on the third Tuesday of each month. So our next one will be on August 20th of 2024. And we're actually going to have Dr. Harvey Castro. He is also doing a lot of work with AI, and he's going to be presenting on the dual role, how AI can enhance not only medicine and professionally, but also personal lives. So I think that's going to be an interesting conversation. We also do convert these live streams to podcasts, and we release podcasts every other week on Thursday morning. So you can go to Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Pandora, Spotify, and get your podcast. This one will be released in several weeks as well. So keep an eye out for that. Obviously, these are sponsored by the University of Tennessee Haslam College of Business. And they're the sponsor of both the live stream and the podcast series. And we developed this specifically with Dr. Leiter and Kate Ashley to try to provide education for physician leaders and bring you the latest and most relevant topics. So we're excited that you joined us today. We hope that you'll take full advantage of these, come back and listen again. Tom Brown has set up a system where you can register for the live streams ahead of time. And please don't forget to like the YouTube channel and get notified when we release future live streams in case you missed them. A special thanks to Kate Atchley, Executive Director for Healthcare Division Graduate and Executive Education at Haslam College of Business, and Dr. Don Leiter, obviously Professor of the University of Tennessee and the Director of the Institute for Healthcare Quality Research and Education, for their support for the organization and for the program. Tom is also, as you're all aware, Tom is very instrumental in helping with this program as well. CME is also available for you. So I'll put up the URL here for your CME hours. Don't forget to click on that and you can register for your CME. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us. Have a great afternoon. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Pemba On Demand, taken from our July 16th live stream with Ben. I enjoyed interviewing Ben and sharing his insights and work with each of you. Pemba On Demand podcasts are released bi-monthly on Thursdays. Please join us in 2 weeks on August 22nd, 2024, for Navigating a Crisis, the Pandemic's Influence on Medical Education with a Veteran Physician Executive. Our guest on that podcast will be Dr. James Calvin. In 4 weeks, on September 5th, 2024, I will have as our guest Dr. Juliana Reese. Dr. Reese is the Director of Healthy Tribes Program at the CDC National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention. She is an American Indian of the Navajo tribe. She will be discussing Heritage to Health, a Native American leader's journey to improve chronic health disparities. And our September 19th show will be titled The Dual Role of AI, Enhancing Medicine and Personal Lives, with guest Dr. Harvey Castro. Dr. Castro will be appearing on our August 20th live stream next month, and we will be repurposing his live stream as a recording for our podcast show. So please tune in for the live stream or the podcast or both. The September 17th, 2024 live stream will be featuring Dr. Jay Greiner, The Path to Excellence, a Physician Executive's Story of Challenges and Successes. I'm looking forward to all of these episodes, and I hope that you will be able to join us. Please visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@PembaOnDemand for the schedule of our future live streams. Please subscribe to the channel and click the notification bell to be notified of our upcoming live streams. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Pemba On Demand, our podcast, on your favorite podcast player. Thank you very much for joining us today. That wraps up our show for today. Thank you very much for joining and listening to the podcast. If you have any comments or questions regarding this episode, please feel free to add them in the comment section on our website, tiny.utk.edu/podcast. We love hearing from you and are happy to answer any questions you may have. I will add a link to the website below. Please also don't forget to subscribe to the podcast by clicking the subscribe button. Add Pemba On Demand to your podcast library today. I would also appreciate it if you could leave a review of the podcast on your podcast player. Share the podcast with your friends and colleagues also. Please take good care of yourselves, and as always, good luck with your future.